So, this is a great, interesting class. So again, I want to thank everyone for joining us as we definitely discuss about the finance and money and finance series. This section here of the class is kind of very interesting because it talks about debt and emergency savings. And this is a very, I'll just be honest with you, it's going to be a very special class for me to teach, just because I know the hope that comes from once you follow God's way and you work and you do what God says and you're debt free, the freedom that comes with that as well. And I just really want and pray that this lesson will be hopeful. It's not meant to be condemnation. It's not meant to make you feel bad. It's really to me to really stir the heart of hope, stir the heart of going to God, work with God, no matter where we are at on our financial journey. Before we start this lesson, I just want to be very, very clear. A lot of the next classes we're going to do is that we are going to focus more on the Dave Ramsey approach. I know the men who are doing the classes have done Dave Ramsey, and we're sharing the benefits of what we have learned. So a lot of the lessons that we're going through follows what Dave Ramsey considered the baby steps. There's a slide at the end of the presentation that I have. It's going to talk or remind us what the baby steps are. So this class is going to focus in on the first three, what I call them, baby steps. The first one is going to really be about how to basically, number one, saving an emergency fund. Next is getting out of debt. The third is saving a larger emergency fund, a 3-6 month emergency fund. And but before we start this, I want to ask your permission on something. First of all, I'm going to go be doing a lot of verses. These classes, if you actually take the Dave Ramsey class, it's really basically like a 6 hour classes. So I'm trying to condense 6 hours of material into 1 hour. So a lot of things I'm going to go through, it's going to go very, very fast and very, very quick. And it's going to be based on the fact that hopefully that you will have a chance to whet your appetite and say, wow, I want to get more interested. Okay, the lessons I'm learning here is a taste. I'm going to go and take the course now where I can learn more in depth each area. So while we may do some practicals, I'm not going to do justice to some of the material, because it touches so many deep points. So this is supposed to give you like a taste, pique your interest, and then you can move forward. And the reason why I kind of start by saying pique your interest a little bit is that one of the lessons I want to share about too is that it's a little bit about my life. Right now I'm learning to be swimming, right? I started to learn swimming. It's one of my life goals. But 20 years ago, I tried to learn swimming. And I came up to the last lesson, which was how to tread water. And that means that basically you have to be in the deep end and you got to wave your hand around and stay still for 2 minutes. Well, I failed that course. So about 20 years later, I started again to learn swimming. And what happened was that I started earlier and I went to some lessons at the Y. So I did some basic swimming. The instructor, young teenagers, give me instructions and he's teaching me how to do these things like I'm learning for the first time. But you know, the truth was, I didn't want to learn to do that. I kind of said, hey, I can't remember how to do this. I don't need to do all these things. I just want to learn to tread water so I don't drown. That was the most important thing. I just didn't want to drown. So I want to tread water. So all of the instructions they were giving me, I was like, yeah. I don't want to do that. I want to go to the big pool. So after about halfway through my lessons, rather than learning the basics, I think I kind of bullied the poor little teenager. He let me in the big pool. And I went and I worked hard. I went like an hour each day and I learned to tread water and I learned to be in the deep end. And then I wouldn't drown. I was very excited. But then you know what happened? I fell in love with swimming, and then I learned something. Treading water is different from swimming. I had to learn how to swim. You remember how I said all those little classes he was trying to teach me the basics of swimming, how I said I didn't have time to learn? Well, guess what? Now I'm having a difficulty. I have to relearn everything. I have to go and I know there's a reason why it's built on different steps, and I had to learn everything. The reason I'm sharing that is today you may be here because you feel like you just need to tread water. You're only going to need to know how to get rid of debt. But if you're not careful, in handling God's money, having the heart about what God teaches about debt, if we don't lean in and learn some of these fundamental things, even if you pay off debt, you're going to realize that when you try to use God's resources that He has entrusted in you, you'll realize that there'll be a lot of challenges and a lot of problems that you would have. And therefore, I'm really encouraging you, please lean in on this time and not just focus on, like, I need to pay off debt. Okay. So let's just go quickly here and really talk a little bit about why start with debt and discussing emergency funds. First, it's about financial peace and starts with wise stewardship. So when you really think about stewardship, it's really God is entrusting you as a manager. And there are verses in the scriptures where God entrusted different wealth. He has different stories and parables about a manager and how sometimes he calls a manager in and says, give me an account of what you've done with my resources. So when we think about debt, it's like, oh, okay. And we think about money, it's about how we handle that. Then we're going to really talk about why eliminate debt, right? And why savings are foundational. And we're going to go into that some more. Again, we're going to discuss, I kind of give a preview of the three baby steps. And then at the end of this, I really want you to walk away with saying, hey, I following God's principles, following the scriptures, following this program, I can rewrite my financial story and my children's financial story. And then finally, we're really going to talk about a key verse here. And I want this verse to always be in your heart and mind. It's one of the verses that kind of governed my heart and for my kids. It says, the borrower is slave to the lender. This impacts me so much that today I will not lend money. I do not lend money. I give money. And that's kind of weird because sometimes somebody would come and say, can you lend me some money? And I'd be like, if I can't afford to give it, I have to be honest and be like, no. Because when you lend money, it changes the dynamic of a relationship. You are now a slave to that person. Could be a family member, could be a friend. You change that. One of the powerful stories I have is where someone wants in our life, they need some money, and we sacrifice, our family did without. To sacrifice and give and share this money and lend this money. And what had happened was their family went to do great things, had a great summer. They did all the fun stuff. How do you think I felt when I knew the sacrifice my family went? I'd like to say I was like Jesus and be like, oh no, it was good. No, I was struggling. I was struggling because I was feeling like, wait, time out. My family had to do without, and your family thrived and did all this stuff. And then what I realized was in my mind that my relationship with that person changed because I'd lent them. And therefore, I was expecting payment. So I started to judge them. The same way God has said that whenever we view debt of any kind, we have to view it not as I'm a customer of Wells Fargo, I'm a customer. Of Citibank. I'm a customer. You're not a customer. God wants you to have the mindset that you have entered into a relationship where you are a slave. Right? So think about the debt trap. I call it the debt trap. Why? It's easy to get in and hard to get out of. And you may say, well, what trap am I really in? Right? So I want you to think about something here. And about, I think it's, and I may have to check these dates. I'm sorry, I'm going a little bit by memory. I just saw the interview with Alan Sorkin. He's like a financial reporter. He interviews a lot of the senior people in Wall Street and everywhere. And he's talking about how in up to 1920s or 1990s around that time, in our country, as a cultural, I'm not saying there was never credit or anything like that, but as a culture, we view debt as a moral sin. Think about that. The whole country, it was viewed as a moral sin. One company decided to change that culture, and that was General Motors. They were the first one to push concept of really credit to buy a large scale product on a large scale. They pushed the concept of we wanted to sell more cards, so we're going to focus on building out this credit system. And they were successful, and it grew and it grew and it grew. So now, when you think about it, we are so ingrained in our culture that credit, because we are a credit-based society, we are a credit-based economy. You know, a lot of effort and money is put into. We a lot of people worry about their credit score. How will they get credit? But this concept is new in our nation. Well, we're almost halfway there now, but it's 100 years. It's not like a long time. We always had this massive credit system. So therefore, we have to really be very careful when we talk about debt. So we're going to look at some statistics around credit cards, mortgages, and it really, these debts really, really draw money from us. It makes us live paycheck to paycheck. That's not the vision God had for his people. That was not the vision that God, when he promised the Israelites, when they came to the land of milk and honey, he didn't say, oh yes, you will live in a system of where you're going to be living from paycheck to paycheck. That wasn't it. But that's what a lot of credit, when you have a lot of credit, you have a lot of debt. That's what happens. You're drawn into living paycheck to paycheck. You know, it's easy to get into debt and credit because it's normally culture. And we're looking at another slide up here, but it's kind of interesting too, because, and I want to be careful when I'm sharing this because I don't want to make it sound like I was always this person who never had debt. No, trust me, I'll share my end of my story at the end of what I went through and maybe give you a little light of why I take it so serious now in my life. It's because I think it's very easy. It's normalized. If you go to somebody and say, hey, I just got a new car, everyone assumes you financed it. You know, if you say, hey, I buy this, it's almost like, okay. And it's not that it's wrong. I look over it. It's not, debt is not sin, but it's so normalized that we almost expect it. Like when I speak to my friends, we all expect it. It's like, oh yeah, college is coming up. Yeah, we get some student loans. I need to buy a house. Yeah. Well, a house, we definitely need a mortgage for. You know, I need a car. So it's so ingrained in us. And now one of the saddest thing is, and I'm hoping that we are not doing is like the pay, like when you do payday lending, that's one, the buy now, pay later. Those are really coming on strong. And we have to be very careful about those. Once you get into debt, it's very hard to get out of debt because a lot of times we don't really know about interest. Now you may know your interest, but a lot of times when you buy something, there's a concept called total cost of ownership. How much does something cost you? So a game I like to play with my kids when they're growing up, they're a little bit older, but we would, is they would want something and they'd be like, I'm going to make this up a little bit. Say they wanted Netflix at $20 a month, right? I'd be like, how much it costs? They'd be like, oh, it's only $20. I said, really? I said, for the year, how much do you pay? They'll go and work out the math. 240. I said, so if I came to you and said, it's going to cost you $240 for Netflix, what would you do? They'd be like, no, we don't want it. That's a lot of money. So what happens a lot of times is when we don't do something called total cost of ownership, how much does this thing cost me over a period of a year or 2 years or 3 years? A lot of times we don't understand, wow, this is what's keeping me in debt because the cost to keep this is so high, I can't pay off my debts. Another thing is like lack of margin. We'll talk about that. You just don't make enough. There's not enough money left over. I've been there. Trust me, I've been there. My time, historically, my job, for those who know me, I used to be a consultant. It was feast or famine. There are days where I had a client, it was great. When I didn't have clients for 3 to 5 months, there was no margin, a lot of stuff, right? And then you have fatigue. Maybe you're just tired. You're tired of really like you're paying these bills, you're paying these bills, you're working hard. You just want to eat out. You just want to do this. Not in a bad way, you're just exhausted. And therefore, these little lifestyle things will creep in and impact you. But one of the things, again, it really has to talk about is remembering this. Whenever we borrow money, and what we're really doing is that we are slowly becoming a slave to a lender. So let's look over this statistic very, very quickly. I don't want to show you something. As of 2023 Q4, this is from Dave Ramsey's site, they have looked at and seen where is a lot of what they consider our debts are. A lot of places that we get low is $1.6 trillion, and that's in your student loan debt. It's 1.3 or 1.13 trillion in credit cards. Mortgage is 12.5 trillion, and auto loan is 1.6. As of 2025, some of these numbers are getting dwarfed because they have raised the interest rates on credit cards. And now a lot of people are being drowning in credit cards. When we share this deck, you for time's sake, I won't go through everyone. Once I share this deck, you get a chance to look at it and say, wow, these are the debt and the non-mortgage debt that people have. And when you have debt and they're charging a lot of money, it really draws down what you can pay. So, one of the things I want to leave us with today is debt is bad. I want to be careful here. If you study scriptures, debt is not a sin. And this is what makes this lessons very hard. I'm going to try to convince you to do something that's a better way of life. And it's not a sin, it's just a better way to live. And that's a hard part. But I do believe very strongly what I've learned is that debt does reveal your heart. It revealed my heart a lot. So basically, because it's not sinful, I want to say expose your heart, it exposes your motives, your desires, and your heart posture. Your heart posture is how you view money, how you view debt, how you view credit. Right? It exposes a lot. Now, I believe that money is a very powerful tool. And for years, I would study out, like, why did God choose money? Why do we have money? Why do we have wealth? Why does God use wealth? Why can't we just live in a different form? And the older I've gotten, I'm not saying I figured it out, I realized something. Money impacts your dreams, your life, your hopes. Yes, God impacts those as well, but money also impacts those. And a lot of times, money can reveal a lot of that out there. Debt reveals that a lot, especially in a credit-based system. Because one of my sons, and I'll share a little bit about him, he said it's a shortcut. Rather than trusting God, sometimes it's a shortcut. Debt also reveals greed. It reveals envy, comparison, jealousy, a desire for immediate gratification. I've been here before. Greed is basically for me. I remember the days of when I used to be like, oh, if I made 20,000, I said, oh, if I only made 25,000, I'll be out of debt. I'll be so living. You make that. Oh, if I only made 30,000, I'll be happy. Life would be great. You make that. It's never consuming. A lot of times I would just buy a lot of stuff and just consume a lot of stuff. Envy is kind of interesting because envy is where you want what that person has. But then you don't want them to have it. If you can't have it, you don't have it. And a great, powerful example of that was Lazarus. I mean, sorry, not Lazarus. Sorry, no, sorry, not that. One great example of that was Judas, right? What did Judas do? Judas, when she was pouring perfume, right, on the feet, Jesus' feet, he challenged her and said, "Hey, you could have sold that. You could have given it to the poor." If you read the rest of the verses, they knew that wasn't his heart. Sometimes we look at other people and God has blessed them, and we would start having the mindset like, and I've had it before, oh, that brother shouldn't have that nice of a home. That brother shouldn't have this. Oh, why does he have this? He could have used it for church or done something. And that can creep it into our mind. If we can't have it because God hasn't blessed us, we have not been disciplined, we don't know the journey, we start judging. And that's a very important thing too, because then we don't want them to have it as well, but it's masked under the spiritual guise. Then we trust money. A lot of times we can put our trust in money, and this is where God doesn't want us to do. He doesn't want us to have trust money. But if we manage his property well, he will give us more. I truly believe that. But we can't trust in it. That means in my journey, I've learned to be happy with a little bit, a lot. I'm in the phase of my life now where God has blessed me with a lot. But if he takes it away tomorrow, I'm honestly content and be like, okay. And that's it. Because I've learned to do without. While I was getting debt free, I've learned to do without for so many years that now it feels a little weird. I'm actually teaching myself to enjoy a little bit of what I have because I'm so used to doing without. Then it talks, then I want to talk about what's your heart behind it. Is your discontent? Sometimes you buy things because you're just not happy with where you are. Maybe you want to look good. Maybe you're fearful. Sometimes we take on debt because we're thinking like, if I don't do this, if I don't pay for this, my kid's going to miss out. And I'm going to talk a little bit about that. And then finally, it's really that it really start with just really having that mindset around debt. Like I'll have a deep conviction about debt. I'll repent about it. I'll study the scriptures out and I'll make sure that I'm a great steward of God's wealth and what he's given me. Okay, so what's the true cost of debt before we go in here? If you have interest, it steals your income. Let's just be honest with that. Since I have no debt, I'm surprised sometimes that I have extra money. Interest, I'm not paying anybody anything. There's a concept out there that I want to really tackle too is good debt. I grew up believing that. Oh, there's good debt. There's good debt and bad debt. Good debt is if I invest in college, buy a home, stuff like that. To be honest with you, my accountant, he taught me the first thing. He said, no, your home is not an investment. He was the first person to taught me that. He says it's a liability. And why is it a liability? He says he knows tons of people, and he hopes I don't experience this, where they build something a block away from your house. They build a new factory, something, and the value goes down. It's not an investment. You pay every month to have it. Now, if later in life you get to sell it, be grateful. But it's a place to live. It's utility. And you must be very careful because if you think it's an investment, you'll justify yourself on spending a lot of money for it. These things I'm not saying are bad. I'm not saying they're bad. But like even college and stuff, you say, oh, I get a lot of debt because of investing. Just be very careful. Because I've known a lot of people where that hasn't worked out well. And we'll go in a little bit more later on. But debt also impacts your peace, your relationships, and opportunities you have in life. A lot of people are very anxious now. And a lot of times, some people say, what's the climate that we're in? The climate. One of the things that there have been studies, they've been doing a lot more studies more, is that with debt, your anxiety level goes up because your body knows. Your body knows that you owe someone money. And when it knows you owe someone money, it knows that someone can come and take something from you. They can take your car. They can take your home. They can take different things from you. And therefore, your body will not let you feel safe. So one of the things to really lower anxiety, and there's a person called John Delaney. He teaches as a psychologist with a lot of degrees. He teaches like one of the things to really live a non-anxious life is really one of the pillars is not having any debt, not owing anyone. So your body don't have that tense moment. I've been there. I've had when we were in our darkest times, I'd go over to a dear friend of mine's home, a brother, and I remember crying, feeling like if they came and took my home, my family have nowhere to live. So I remember those stress. I remember those feelings. But God here teaches us that, hey, if you plan diligently, it leads to abundance. But whoever is hasty comes only to poverty. You have to be very careful with it. And this is why this is a very mature teaching, because it's not about is it right or wrong. God is trying to say, this is what's best. This is what he wants us to be very careful of. Okay, so let's go to some practical first. Is everyone still with me? Okay, so let's go to some practical first. So to get our hands around debt very, very quickly, really want to talk about like, well, why does this matter, right? Why does budgeting, weekly budgeting, and track and a 30-day tracking experiment, why it matters? The first thing is, you can't manage what you don't measure. So what I do today, and I've done the weekly, I've done the bi-weekly, and now my wife and I do monthly budgets. We're actually discussing very firmly that things have gotten a little loosey-goosey, a little bit too much. We don't overspend. So we want to go back in though, because we want to be very intentional how we spend. So we're going back to bi-weekly. Like that's, I get paid every 2 weeks. So we're doing that. But if you don't know how much is coming in, and this is sad, majority of people actually do not even know how much money they make. And you, and it sounds weird. You may be like, that's impossible. You would be surprised, because a lot of times people may not know the inside, or just know what to take home. They don't know a lot. But this is where you have to become very diligent. What a weekly budget does, it makes you focus, right? And then you can say, oh, I did a week. This is how I spent. This is what went out. This is what came in, right? And then you can learn to, so next week I'll do something different. Did I spend too much on food? Okay, did I spend so much on this? Maybe you have a recurring expense that you didn't realize, that you didn't put down. You can adjust your budget. And then finally, you know, it really lets you just really track your expenses. Like, hey, here's what's going on. Develop some discipline, you know, and just really have a clear plan for how you strengthen your financial stewardship around this. I want to pause here for a quick second and just really talk about, it's kind of interesting about budgeting too, right? Think of budgeting as hey, this is where I'm going to tell my money to go. Now, I said something wrong there. I said, this is where my money goes. I want to reframe it a little bit. And this is a new thing I was praying about this week, and it kind of came to me. Your budget time, because I encourage everyone, have a weekly budget. And over the years, I've taught this. I've reached out to people, my friends, we talk. A lot of times, even we fell into this trap. We're too busy to budget. We don't have time to budget. So I kind of reframe a little bit. I said, okay, it's a quiet time. Your budget time is a quiet time. And this time, read a few verses and act as though you're talking to God about how you're going to spend his money. What you're going to give of his money? What you're going to cover for your family of his money? What are you going to invest of his money so that later it will grow and you can give more to others? So if you feel like you don't have time to budget, make it a quiet time. On Sundays, that would be your quiet time. Bring some verses together. You did church, you did communion, amen. Friday, so, I mean, Sunday evening, sit down with your spouse and you have to do it together. Do not do it separately. I wish I had time to go in and talk more. I just don't. Please do the Dave Ramsey course, because they do talk about marriages and the dynamics of marriages. I'm not going to do it justice here, but please do. If you, I'll just say this one side thing. If you and your wife are not working on your budget, if you're married, there are some challenges in your marriage. I don't care if you think that no, you walked on water this morning. There are challenges because money impacts dreams. It impacts your freedom. It impacts so much that I know for my wife, a lot of stuff came out. Once we start doing the budget, a lot of stuff about our imagine our marriage and how we work together and how we share our hearts and how we aligned on different things came out. And we had to learn to work together in that. So one of the things we can do is while you're doing your budget every week, please do that. Also track, get a little book. You know, I have a little book here about, it's like you can go see if you can get like a dollar. And every time you spend a dollar, write it down. Do not, I don't want you to say, oh, I use my credit card, I can look at a statement. No. This is a muscle memory idea. My wife did it about 40 years ago. I don't know, not 40, about 30 years ago, 35 years ago when I met her. Write it down. When you write it down, you get a muscle memory of being intentional. You're trying to change a habit. Budgeting is about changing a habit. That's why it's very hard for us to do. Write it down. Track your daily expenses. What are some of your group expenses? Just write this down. So it's not in your budget. Your budget is what you're going to tell it to do, but then also when you track how you spend it. And you want to compare what you budgeted and what you actually spent. And you'll see where there's leaks and what you can do and you can change. Okay, so when we send a deck out, there's a link. You can also look on it too, because there's Dave Ramsey has a link. You can go to the link, and it really talks about what you do in your budget. In your budget, the first thing you do is that you list your income. So if you go to the Dave Ramsey website for budget, there's a free chart you can download, and it will just tell you about your paycheck. So you can then input your income, and then you give. I want to say something here. Even if you're in debt, I've been in debt before. You're feeling like, oh no, you have a lot of debt. I had a personal conviction, and I want to share it with you. I'm not saying you must have it, but a guiding principle I have in my life. I do not come before God empty-handed. That's just a personal conviction I have. If I have a dollar, if I have five, maybe it's not my full salary in the lean years. I couldn't give as much as I did because I didn't have a job, because I'm not consulting. I always budgeted and always had something to give. I encourage us that as we go through this journey, if you truly believe this is God's money and wealth, you give. Give, even if you can't give the full tithe that you want to do one day, give. Right? Then that's why if you use his sheet, it's one of the first things you do. After you do the income, you give. Then you talk about your savings. And then you kind of go through about your food, how much you want to pay for food. And you write down utilities, your housing, your transportation, if you pay insurance, different type of insurance, like your health. So you're going to jot each of these items down. Then you're going to list your credit cards. List all your credit cards for each one and what you're paying. Then your student loans, if you have student loans. Then your payments, right? Fund money, you can track that. However, you're going to see that I'm going to tell you should not be having any fund money if you're in debt, because God is very clear what to do, right? And then there's, if you have a miscellaneous, list out your miscellaneous. Be very specific. You have to know everything. You remember how God came to the guy who was basically, he's managing God's finances, and God wants to give an account. So he called up everybody and said, oh, change a number here, change a number here. He knew exactly who owed what. When God gives you an account, an audit, think of every week you meet with God, you're showing them this is how I'm using your money. And it has to be very clear. Okay. So, and again, at the end of the week, you review it, you stay track, and that. So let me dive into something here. We have about 23 minutes left, and I want to dive in here about the next three steps. In the Dave Ramsey program, there's a step called building your starter emergency fund. So this is basically, think of this like this is going to be $1,000 you're going to save up. You put it separately in a savings account. This is for your emergencies, right? So it's trying to create financial margin. Now you may say $1,000, why $1,000? Well, $1,000 is not a huge emergency fund, right? But most Americans, I think it's up to like, they just did a study like 42, is it 40 or 60% of Americans can't even cover $400 of expenses. So what this will prevent you doing is that if you save up your emergency fund, as you pay off debt, emergency will pop up. Now, what is an emergency fund? What counts as emergency? An emergency isn't like, hey, a whole bunch of my friends are going to go out. I'm going to go to dinner. I haven't seen them in a long time. And it's going to be a Bible talk dinner. That's not an emergency. You can go and pray with the Lord and sit and say, I'm fasting today. I'll be with you. That's not an emergency, right? An emergency is truly an unexpected thing. A child gets ill. That's not unplanned for. You have the money that you can pay for. So the first thing you want to do is that you definitely want to have the emergency fund. Not, but how do you get the emergency fund? You got to create margin. When I say about financial margin, I mean if you look to your budget, you got to start cutting back stuff. This is where I know for my family, and again, I want to come across, I want to be careful here. I'm not trying to brag, I'm trying to be respectful, but I remember when my family, we were at this point and we're like, no, we need an emergency fund. We actually cut our food bills so much that if you got food like SNAP and stuff like that, the government has guidelines, statistic guidelines saying if you're a family of this size, it's so much money they'll give you. We were about 60% of what the government gives out. We cut our food bill. We lived on like rice, veggies. My wife was a great cook. She's very smart. She stretched that dollar. I remember one time we had young kids. We brought them a big bag of goldfish. I remember it was 9.99 for a big bag. And I told my kids, I said, listen, this represents almost, I think it was a time, almost like 10% or a little less than 10% of our food bill. And we were like, nope, we do not buy goldfish anymore. We went to Walmart, we got whales because all kids need a little food like the little fishes. We grew up on whales. And to show you how that left an impression on my kids, even a few nights ago, Kiefer was laughing about the whales budget. We lived on whales, but we cut. There's only so much you can cut, though. You got to get a margin. So as you cut your bills, you cut a lot of things, you got to look into saying, hey, do I need to take a second job? Do I need to take something? I need to save up the $1,000. Maybe it's getting advice about how to get a pay increase. I spoke to a brother once, and many, many years ago, just by chance, was walking by, and somehow it was a friend of mine, close. We're talking, and it came up that he was being underpaid, and we were able to almost double his salary. But he's not, because he was so underpaid, he didn't realize it. But getting all the disciples in your life and being honest and open with them can change a lot of things, your financial out future, by people knowing, right? And the next thing is, after you save the thousand, you really want to protect it and say, put it in a savings. Again, that's what it's for. So let me go and talk about getting out of debt. You know, I'm not going to do just justice here, but please go back in and the verse here, Proverbs 6, 1 to 5. For those who ever want to memorize a good verse around debt, memorize this verse. Verse 1 starts off where God is basically saying, time out. If you basically co-sign for someone, give a surety for someone, he then goes on, God then goes on to say, you need, the highest priority should be getting out of debt. Getting it out. He closed out the verse by saying, deliver yourself like a gazelle from the hand of the hunter. But if you please read that verse, NIV version, you see the urgency God places on this. The reason why this is a funny thing here, you can see the gazelle is running for its life, and the cheetah is going to eat him. God, if you look at the verses, I think it's 4. You'll see the seriousness God says. Like, you don't sleep. God is like, you don't even go to sleep. You go and you get rid of this. You work. Because in God's mind, you are a slave to this person now. And you really have to think about this. That's the intensity you need to have. But how do you get out of debt? I want to be careful here. I believe in the snowball method. There's different method, the avalanche method, snowball method. The snowball method is this. And please take a full class because I don't have time to go to do justice. It's basically list your debts from smallest to largest. A lot of people tell you, don't do that. That makes no sense. If you have a high credit card debt, focus on that. What studies they have done, repeatedly studies that they have done, they have found out that what happens is if you pay the smallest debt first, it builds a psychological momentum. You don't feel as fatigued, just making progress. This is the process my wife and I used. And we had to just say we were humble and we trust the process. And I'll tell you why later. And then we were able to go through and we were able to address debt. Smallest to largest pays it off. So if you have a debt for 250, then 500, then 1,000, 10,000, pay off all the money in your margin you're creating your budget, pay off the 250. Then you take the minimum payments from the 250 and then you pay off the 500. Then you take that and that's a snowball. You see, it's getting bigger and bigger and bigger. But God is saying, hey, you got to be hustling. This is serious. These are not my words. Please study some scriptures around how God views it. Paul says, hey, there should be no debt outstanding. It's very clear. So, after, if you work very hard, baby step 3 that I normally talk about, it's saying, hey, okay, I paid off my debt. Normally, paying off your debts should not take you more than, say, 18 months. If you have debts that take you more than 18 months, non-mortgage debt, you need to sit down and say, what can I sell? Do I sell my car and get a cheaper car? Do I sell stuff around the home? Do I sell my kids? No, you know, I'm just joking about that. But what do you sell? You get rid of things, right? so that you could be out of debt. Now, once you're out of debt, say 18 months time, typical person can be out of debt in 18 months time. If you're out of debt fully, then what you start doing is building something called an emergency fund, a full emergency fund. This is for the bigger storms, because $1,000 is for the baby storms. Now, when you start building this cushion here, think about it as like 3 to 6 months. That means you got to start saving and you continue that intensity you had paying off debt, and you just keep the intensity. And then you save up 3 to 6 months of your expenses. I'm telling you, this seems impossible in a lot of our hearts right now. It did for me. But once I trust God and I was doing it God's way, you'd be surprised how many different margins come up, how many different things come up. And we were able to do our 3 to 6 months very fast. And it wasn't just by my salary. And what it does is that once you do this, you want to make sure this money is not with your checking account. Open up a high yield saving account, a separate sub account. Don't make it too easy to get. So my savings account, I don't have a debit access to it. I don't. I think I have. You know, I have some electronic transfer because that's a high yield saving account. But when we had it at our local bank, we had no debit cards to it. If you needed money from emergency fund, you had to get up, wait till the bank opens, and go get the money. That created a friction point, so we didn't spend the money. I want you to do that first and make sure you don't easily get it. And what you'll find is you have emergency fund, it builds your confidence, you won't fear as much. Then things that used to be a big inconvenience, like a tire going out, something go out, becomes like an inconvenience to you. And God here even teaches in Proverbs, read Proverbs 6, it's saying, hey, you got to go out and really store provisions. It's kind of funny because sometimes we use verses that say, don't store up stuff for heaven. But time out. I think we use that one verse for, and we negate a lot of the other verses where God says, time out. No, a wise, disciplined person saves. You also leave an inheritance for your children's children. A godly man does that. Don't ignore those other verses for that one verse where Jesus was really talking about your heart. Where your heart should be. Okay. So let's talk a little bit here. And I know I'm going a little bit fast. I really apologize. So guarding your heart against backsliding debt. This is a very funny one. I want to share a story of what happened because my wife and I have been out of debt for a while, right? And what I mean, and like I want to be careful here. We're fully debt free about 3 years. And then, you know, we had neglected a lot of stuff because we're saying we had to pay off debt. And I'll share you the reason why, but we had to pay off debt. So our kitchen had fallen apart, different things had fallen apart. So we're like, okay, we're going to save up the money. So we start saving up the money. And then, you know, in my heart, I'm a spender. I'm like, you know what? Isn't that what a HELOC is for? Maybe if I did a HELOC. And then I talked to my wife. My wife was like, no, what are you doing? Crazy? No. We're not going to go back in. And I had to get my conviction again. No, we're not people. We're trusting God. We're not. So we saved up money. We saved a little more money. As we just saved the money, you know what happened? Our septic went out. The money that we wanted to do to just fix up our kitchen, septic went out. And I'm not saying a full kitchen remodel. We couldn't afford that. But we had our version of kitchen remodel. Now, if I'd gone to borrow a HELOC to do that kitchen refresh update and then my septic went out, we would be in a lot of debt. So I learned one lesson that taught me was like, I gotta be careful because I want to justify why we can do some stuff. But when I trust God, right, that money was there to do the big emergency. And over time, we're able to save up the money to do our kitchen refresh. But that's where, even if you think you're out of debt, you gotta be careful. I have to watch my heart all the time. Gotta slide back into debt. You know, you get credit offers. If you're fully out of debt, you don't have any credit card. Actually, credit scores goes down, so you may not get a lot of offers. But while you're paying off debt, they'll see that you're paying off debt, and they'll extend you more credit, and they'll tell you should get credit. And I know for me, you know, I have to be very careful, not about credit cards. I have to be careful about other form of debt. I had kids who went to school, and And I'm a big believer in education. My wife homeschooled. We big believers in education. The sad, I remember having to tell my children they got into pretty impressive schools. And I had to tell them, I'd be honest with them, saying, we do not believe in debt. We will not take a loan out. You cannot go. My first son worked two jobs while he paid for his own college. He had debt. We don't judge him. He had debt, but he came back and said, yeah, you know, he worked. He didn't have that much debt. And even the debt he had, he didn't have to take it on. He was being a shortcut. He wanted to buy sneakers and do different stuff. A second son, on his own choice, he didn't do it for school, but he joined the military, but he ended up getting his college paid for. My middle child, which is super smart, everyone think like he's the golden child in my eyes, that dad loves him more, is not true. But he got a scholarship to a nice school, a nice package, but it wasn't a full scholarship. And we tell him, I'm sorry, we don't do debt. He had to give up his scholarship. He worked 20 to 30 hours, and he traveled 2 hours from our school to take the train to go to his school, his college. 2 hours, about twice a week or three times a week, sometimes. And it hurt me and my wife because we saw other people do other things. But again, I'm not judging them. I'm just saying for my family, we don't. Now you ask my sons if they missed college, they did this, they were missed out on stuff. They're like, no way. They have no debt. They're saving. They're building a life. They're saving to buy their homes. They're doing everything. They have no debt except one. He has a few little stuff, but they wouldn't change it. I know for me, I have this I deserve it mentality. I'd been through Dave Ramsey before. You know what happened? I got back into debt. Why? I didn't learn a lot of principles. So I remember one time sitting down. And I felt like I deserved a new car. I was driving an older car. I need a newer car. It wouldn't be a brand new car, but it'd be a newer car. And they gave me credit. And I said to myself, you know, I've worked hard. I'm working a company. I'm moving up in the company. I deserve it. I went back into debt. And I'm gonna share a story about how this impacted me, but just hold that pin in your mind. And then, as I said before, be careful. We don't slide back into debt. It's very easy. Even for me, I do not take it for granted. If I fold my hands, if I'm not careful, I'll go back into debt. Very. So it's my spiritual conviction about not being in debt. So why am I teaching all this here? Because most of the things you're saying, well, you should be a lot more practical. Most of this information that I share with you today, you can find a lot more by going online and Googling it. Yeah, ChatGPT, they'll give you a pure program. I think what happens a lot of times is that your debt reflects your habits. Your budget reflects habits, and habits are hard to change. Once you're ingrained in you, it's very hard to change. And that's why you have to have a new wineskin mindset, right? The old wineskin doesn't work. Have a new wineskin mindset. First thing, it challenges your heart. You got to move away from consumerism and need this and be content. Be happy with a lot, be happy without a lot. Paul shared that. Next, live on less than you make. It sounds easy. I have to lose weight. I've been trying, you know, I should be losing weight for a while. But 20 years ago, I met a doctor. He told me, hey, to lose weight, you do these three things. You eat less calories, you exercise, right? And he kind of went through. It's not, he said, it's not rocket science. I did not follow those things because my habit doesn't let me do that. Managing God's money is simple. You budget, you save, you give, but it's hard to do. And that's why you need people in your life to really help you know, to talk about it. I'm not saying you have to share your business with everybody, but you need to have your wife working very closely with you, a close friend working with you. Not that they tell you what to do or you have to report to them, but I have people in my life now that I talk to. I have a group of men who I talk to about larger things, and we talk about their hearts, we talk about different stuff, we talk about stuff. Then money problems are often heart problems first. It could be that maybe you're not diligent in your work. Maybe you don't believe in working two jobs to get out of debt. Maybe you don't have certain things. So there's a lot of challenges that you can have. I'll tell you, once you start getting serious about it, once you get open with it, and you ask God, it can really impact you, and it cause you to have true change. So to recap what I just said, I said a lot there again, please, is to build your $1,000 emergency fund. That's the first step. The second step is baby step two. You attack the desk, list them out tonight, attack it. And then, you budget intentionally. And then the third step is that really start doing your emergency fund. But immediately, what you should start doing today is do your budget, start talking to one or two personal friends, definitely your wife, be on a line, be aligned with them. And have that weekly quiet time with God about your money. Lay it up before God. That should be quiet time. And he says here in Proverbs 16, it says, commit to the Lord whatever you do, and he will establish your plans. Let God know how you're going to spend his resources. And be honest, there are times where I felt like, no, it's mine. I worked for it. To work with God and that heart, that spirit. So what I want to close out here a little bit, the reason why this is important to me, and I'm not going to go over time. I'm going to make it short, but I'm trying to be sensitive what I share because it's going to be in a public forum. So I may hold back a few things, so just bear with me. But many years ago, as I said before, I was Dave-ish first. I was like, yeah, I want to Dave Ramsey. I know that's bad, but I didn't have a conviction. So I went back into debt. I got a car, I got two cars, I even got a HELOC to cover the cars, just in case, because that was my emergency fund. So I kind of not manage God's money anymore. Because before I was kind of drowning in debt. And the reason why I wanted, it's not that I had a deep conviction about learning money. I just didn't want to feel in debt anymore. So I did Dave Ramsey, I didn't want to feel in debt. I didn't have a true heart about what God taught about debt and having the seriousness of it. About 8 years ago, I had a health scare and I'd borrowed all this money again. And the health scare I had was that they would put a time clock. If it happened to me, the doctor said, if you have this, you normally have a fixed amount of years left to live. I realized that if anything happened to me and I died, my life insurance wouldn't be there because of the type of illness, and it was coming up for renewal. My wife could not afford to keep my home, the home that we had. There'd be no life insurance, no home. We had no money because if you know, once you die, they sell everything you have to cover all the debts that you have. My kids would be destitute. I remember going to God, crying in tears, not for my life. I was crying that God, in next, I really need for you to listen to me. Help me, God. I want to change this. I do not want my wife, my kids to be destitute, have nothing. I'll work extra hours. I'll work long hours. I'll sacrifice. I'll do anything. I'll be humble and I'll do what you say. God is a faithful God. He listens to me and he rolled up his sleeve and said, okay, I'm going to help you. First thing I'm going to let you do is you're not in the right job. So I lost my job. God has a sense of humor. Lost that job immediately. And then a new job came up. That job, I applied. And I was very timid because I was desperate for a job, but I didn't want to ask for too much money. I asked for so little money that they came in and HR said, no, we can't pay you that little bit of money. We got to pay you much more. I got to pay you more. But there's a band that I have to pay. I didn't get a lot of advice. I actually sought a lot more advice, but I got paid that band and I got that job and I worked hard and I got promotion. Every little extra dollar came in. I followed Dave Ramsey plan without fail. I did it. I trust God, and I said, this is what's going to happen. I'm going to give. And I rose up and every little extra, I did not increase our lifestyle. We still lived on less. We did not go on vacation. Our first vacation that we had over many years, my wife got a second job and she scraped together some money. And in the middle of the pandemic, when everything was cheap, we went to Hershey, Pennsylvania for my birthday. And that was it. We didn't travel. We didn't do anything. Then what finally happened is that once we got serious about it, God was open the blessings and the floodgates. Then God changed my situation again. But after all those years, God got us to a point of where there's no debt, that if I had passed away, my wife and kids would be okay. Our mortgage was paid for, everything. It took a lot of sacrifices. My kids did not go to the school that they should have gone to, that I would want them to have gone to. They did not experience what I would want them to do. But the deal I made with God was, I would follow you and I would manage it and I'll do what's right. I do not know what your relationship with God has to be on that level. But I do know one thing this time around. I do not borrow money for anything. It pains me. I have two more kids. One of them is very, very bright, has a very bright future on some stuff. We're saving some money as we can, but debt for us is off the table, and we have told them already. God will provide a way, but we will not. And it hurts your heart. I'm not saying another pride. I'm just saying these are challenges that we have. So I shared that not to brag, not to boast. I hope you don't feel that way. I'm sharing that just because I really want you guys to see that you have to commit yourselves to God first. You have to trust God. In this journey, always give, always, always connect with God. I can see, and I want to wrap it up now. It's 8:30, but I want to say this. When I tell people I truly believe that God really hears you, he's your provider, because I've lived it, I've seen it in my life. It was not easy. We lived less than on, we lived on people less than on food stamps. We struggled, we didn't buy anything, we did a lot of stuff. Again, I want to wrap up now. I want to thank everyone for coming, everyone's heart for here. I really want to just really encourage you. Please take the courses. I'm always here if you want a more deeper story. I can't share a lot here. I hope you appreciate that. And again, I don't want to come across bragging or anything like that. I just want to show you how God has done and what motivated me to be very serious. Thank you very, very much for your hearts.